This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. A lot of the activity surrounding the White House at the moment, not only the visit of the Saudi Crown Prince to meet with President Trump, which of course had a lot of attention because we do know that President Trump is very eager to include Saudi Arabia in the Arab in the Abraham Accords, and that would really be considered a massive, massive win if he's able to do that. I think that that's really the big prize for President Trump in the current situation, for him to take the next step in terms of setting out his Middle East plan, but also some further focus around the White House, because the president has invited all of the 20 hostages who were released in the final stage of the hostage release to the White House to visit him. And lots of controversy surrounding their travel to the United States, because apparently the U.S. administration did offer to put on a plane, to charter a flight, to take those who have survived Hamas captivity to the U.S. The Israeli government stepped in and said that wouldn't be appropriate. We think that the Israeli government should cover those costs. But the way in which the Israeli government is planning to cover those costs is to fly the hostages on a commercial flight. I'm guessing they won't necessarily have first class accommodation on the plane. It'll be relatively slimmed down, and they will be transported around Washington by some minibus of some sort. And so lots of controversy around whether the Israeli government shouldn't do a little bit better and maybe even have allowed the U.S. administration to cover the costs and to send the flight, let's just send the plane, a chartered plane, as they had offered to do. I'm not sure what I think about that, but I'm guessing you guys will have your views.
I have absolutely no doubt about that either. Let's talk about Hamas being reported to be stockpiling weapons abroad and in Gaza. Give us the information here, and what has been the U.S. response to this?
Well, there are a few things that we do know for sure. And the things that we know for sure is that the disarming of Gaza was one of the main key principles of the ceasefire agreement. Now, it's something that Israel has reminded the U.S. about, and the world, and Hamas, and everybody else involved at every possible opportunity, that it is not acceptable to have Hamas on Israel's borders in Gaza, not with arms and not in control of Gaza. Those were really the two principles that were laid down that everybody seemed to agree to. And I, for one, was highly skeptical about, because I was sure that somehow Hamas would find a way to work around this. Them agreeing to disarm and not to be in power in Gaza seems to go against every possible objective that Hamas may have. And now we are hearing anecdotal stories and reports about Hamas finding ways to somehow stockpile weapons outside of Gaza, outside of the region, even abroad, somewhere where they can lay their hands on these weapons, and I'm guessing bring them into the region at some point in the future, but at least for now have control of them somewhere else outside of the danger zone. And there are also little cracks appearing in the resolve of the United States to ensure that Hamas is disarmed. And I just liked for a moment to take a step back and to explore some of my thoughts about this whole issue of disarming Hamas. Let's be clear, Hamas is not seeking to hold onto weapons in order to defend themselves. Nobody is there to attack them, unless, of course, they bring it upon themselves, which is exactly what they did on October the 7th. They brought it upon themselves. Up until that moment, they were in power in Gaza. They were conducting their business and doing whatever they were doing. But mostly, as we've now discovered, they were setting up Gaza to attack Israel. That was their primary purpose on October the 7th. They have said on numerous occasions that they would repeat October the 7th, given the opportunity to do so at every chance. And now they are pushing back on this issue of disarming. Now, the only reason that I can come up with that they would wish to keep their arms is to carry out another attack against Israel. And so therefore, if that's your conclusion, and it's certainly my unequivocal conclusion, then it is little surprise that Israel is insisting upon Hamas being disarmed. Is that practically achievable? Well, I think that that's a separate discussion. It may not be practically achievable, because by the time you've dug around in the tunnels and by the time you've dug up all the arms storage facilities that Hamas have, both within Gaza and potentially in places like Turkey and Qatar and other places around the world, you may not be able to disarm Hamas totally. But I think that not carrying out with firm determination the statement in the ceasefire agreement that Hamas will be disarmed, and not actually acting upon it, which means going into Gaza and finding whatever weapon storage facilities you can find and destroying every weapon that one can lay their hands on, I think would be a big mistake. And I think that it would lay the platform for a potential future attack against Israel already now, when we've hardly recovered from the last one. So I just like to put that out there, because it seems to be reported so broadly in the press that Hamas is stockpiling weapons and that the US is not particularly insistent upon this idea of Hamas disarming. And let's just think about why it is that Hamas would want to retain their weapons at all. And to me, it's an obvious answer.
So what does that mean, though, in terms of the what does that mean in terms of the way forward? Because as you've said, there was little doubt that this was going to be the Hamas approach. There was no way that they were going to really disarm, given that it goes against their whole purpose.
Well, I think that when we rewind back to the ceasefire agreement and we see where we have come since then I would say that given the opportunity again to come to that ceasefire agreement, and particularly on the part of the Israeli government, I would take that with both hands over and over and over again. And we've seen the release of our live hostages, and we've received back almost all of the bodies of those who were killed and whose bodies were held in Gaza. There are still three bodies remaining in Gaza, and we won't rest until they come home. But ultimately, I would say that the ceasefire agreement that was brokered by the US administration has certainly been had its advantages to Israel, and has certainly delivered some real results. Now we're getting down to the difficult parts of the disarming of Gaza, of Hamas, and ensuring that Hamas is not in power, and also potentially redrawing the borders, because that's another very, very controversial subject that's going on right now. Because let's just summarize that currently, Gaza is split into two. Approximately 50% of Gaza is currently under the control of the IDF, the so-called yellow zone, and the yellow line, which is the border between the IDF forces and what is not controlled by the IDF, and I would say still belongs to Hamas, is about 50% of Gaza. Mm. And the residents of Gaza have all been shifted into the new smaller area, which is no longer under the control of the IDF. And there are fears that that will be the new de facto border of Gaza, that there will not be the opportunity for residents of Gaza to return back to areas which are now currently in the yellow zone. There have been also some statements about potentially the US government wishing to get involved to help develop that yellow zone and to create something much more than was there before. But there's no current talk of allowing residents of Gaza to return back to the yellow zone. And this has already been in place for some months. So it's becoming a sort of a de facto reality on the ground and also highly controversial. So this is where the ceasefire agreement and its terms becomes really, really difficult. The next stage, initially, what we saw was a cessation of hostilities. We saw food aid being poured into Gaza. We saw residents being able to move around within the area that's not currently under the IDF control. And of course, we saw the return of the hostages, both dead and alive. So those achievements are undoubtedly have been worthwhile. Entering into the ceasefire agreement. I think both for us and I'm guessing for Hamas, who've managed to reassert their control over the 50% area that they still have access to, now becomes the difficult bits. And this is where the whole pronouncement of peace in the Middle East for a long-term period starts to look a little shady. It starts to look like it really isn't going to be possible to achieve, because the ultimate objective of Hamas remains unchanged. And what they did on October the 7th, they will try to do again. They will use whatever means they have. They will use whatever land they have. They will use whatever the US government is willing to give them. But they will certainly try to build themselves again to carry out a further attack. And if people still can't believe that, then we haven't learned anything from the events of the last 2 years.
The concern here, of course, is the fact that even while Hamas is saying it, people are still shrilling for them. So that doesn't bode well for the rest of the world. I wanted to ask you about Prime Minister Netanyahu speaking out against the violence perpetrated by Jewish extremists. How is the government reacting to this?
So just to summarize, I mean, there have been a number of instances of Jewish extremists carrying out attacks against Arabs, against people within the Palestinian Authority area, against people living within Judea and Samaria. And I would like to emphasize that the view of the majority of Israelis is that this is not okay. This does not represent who we are. This is not very Jewish, and this is not what Israel is about. Now, those attacks have been allowed to be carried out under the kind of cloud of the war, where the attention is really focused on Gaza, is focused on Lebanon, has been focused on Yemen for periods of time, that the war has effectively distracted attention away from events that have been going on within Judea and Samaria. The IDF has, by the way, also used this in order to carry out very clinical attacks against pockets of terror activities within Judea and Samaria in order to take care of those without having the world up in arms, because, as again, the attention has been elsewhere. But by the same token, Jewish extremists have carried out numerous attacks against property, against individuals belonging to the Palestinians, the Arabs who live within the Judea and Samaria and within the Palestinian Authority, and it simply isn't okay. The other thing which I think has somewhat allowed this to happen is those individuals who are within the government, and particularly I'm talking about Itamar Ben-Gvir and about Bezalel Smotrich, who come from communities where those kind of activities are generally encouraged and certainly allowed. And because those two individuals are within the government, and Ben-Gvir in particular has some control over the security services within the state of Israel, the people who support them and who are extremists in their views feel that they have been empowered to carry out these attacks. Finally, the Prime Minister has spoken out, and he has said that this is not acceptable, and that action will be taken against those individuals who carry out these acts. The problem is that the Prime Minister, even though he addressed this in the weekly cabinet meeting, and he made sure that those two cabinet members heard his statements about the fact that this is not okay, the problem is, unfortunately, that the arms of government are not taking proper action quickly enough and decisively enough to stop this. And so while the Prime Minister is making the statements that he's making, which are extremely important, what we're seeking now is for the security services to take action to not only prevent these things from happening in the future, but also to take action against those individuals who have perpetrated this up until now, and to apply the law to them, because there is a law and this violence is not acceptable. And I'd like people listening out there, particularly Jewish people who wish to support Israel but don't support these activities, I'd like you to know that you're in good company, and that most of Israel certainly supports your point of view, and that ultimately the public in Israel will not allow this to continue. And the fact that we have been wronged by some of the actions that have gone on October the 7th and since then doesn't justify us behaving like this. It's not okay. There is no concept here of two wrongs make a right. The fact that we need to defend ourselves against thuggery and against violence and terrorism that we've had to defend ourselves against doesn't mean that we have the right to carry that out and to behave in the same way. We will not accept it. It's not Jewish behavior, and it's certainly not representative of the state of Israel.
Go, Anthony. I like that. Thank you very much. You said exactly what it is that many of us are feeling. It is 8 o'clock. That was Anthony Reich with the Israel Report. You can catch Anthony tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.